Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is my friend Sanjay Kumar. Most recently, Sanjay was senior director at the Department of Commerce on the team implementing the CHIPS and Science Act. Before this, he was in the industry for more than 20 years up and down the semiconductor value chain, working at systems companies like Facebook, fabless companies like Infineon, NXP, Broadcom, OmniVision, and manufacturing companies like Intel Foundry. Welcome to the podcast, Sanjay.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me here. Excited to be here. I'm an avid reader of the SemiWiki. Every day I learn something new at SemiWiki. So thank you so much for doing. Thank you and team for what you're doing with the SemiWiki.
Ah, it's nice of you to say. So I was a little bit shocked when you moved from Silicon Valley to Washington, D.C. I mean, what brought you to the Department of Commerce and the CHIPS Act?
Thank you for the question. I mean, it was on my mind for a long time, to be honest. So I grew up with the values of service to the country and the society. So when I came here, I've been thinking about it. But I waited for my green card to be able to do something. And when I got my green card, I went to Washington, D.C., stayed there for some time trying to understand how can I contribute and pay back to the country. But I couldn't figure out, you know, how the government works. So I came back to the Valley and kept on working in the private industry. But in the back of my mind, I was always thinking that I have an obligation to do something for the country. So in 2021, when I was at Facebook, I was again thinking about it. But again, I did not know how to go about it. And that's where I decided to take the role at Intel to expand the manufacturing and share my expertise from the fabless companies and the system companies. But again, I even when we were discussing, I was, you know, they were asked what would be your ideal role if you won a lottery. I said, I want to do this for the country, what I'm going to do over here. So we joked about it, but I wrote a post about it that, you know, whenever the opportunity will come and I'll go serve. And in 2023, this opportunity came around, and I thought this is where everything, whatever I have learned about the industry, culminates. So this gives me an opportunity to pay back. And so it was a privilege and honor to be able to serve, and hopefully I'll be able to do it again.
So in your opinion, what has been the impact of the CHIPS program thus far?
We can measure the impact of CHIPS program with different metrics, such as capacity expansion in the logic or memory or packaging or total job creation, dollars spent in per job creation, or the implication to the national society, implication to the national security. So I've been in the industry for more than 20 years, but I have not witnessed this type of broad manufacturing built up in the country when it comes to the semiconductor. So if the companies, they proceed as per the plan, I think we will have around 200% expansion in the leading edge production. Probably will also double the mature node production, but the buildup is broad, including compound semiconductor, photonics, packaging, and the supply chain companies. So I worked on a couple of deals. I think for the first time in 30 years, we are expanding 300 millimeter silicon wafer production in the country. We are expanding 2D, 2.5D, and 3D product packaging production capabilities with Intel, Samsung, SK, Amkor. So the gains are broad. For the first time, we are establishing a manufacturing base such as testing equipment or glass substrate production from SK Hynix. I don't remember the number, so I might be wrong, but I think for every dollar that is invested through the grant, it's generating $4 or $5 worth of economic activity in the downstream supply chain of the semiconductor. And I believe that in future, we will see this investment will bring in the supplier base of these companies. So there are many companies who haven't come here, which are in the supply chain. but I think they are looking at establishing presence in US in the cluster, in a manufacturing cluster on the West Coast, Mid East, and Northeast. So had a discussion with many of those companies, and they are looking at the expansion of TSMC's and Samsung's and Intel, and thinking of bringing all that base over here. I think where we need to do more is workforce development. The program has been pretty, I would say, aggressive or making this investment, and the companies also have committed to the workforce development. But I think we need a mindset shift as a country. We need to win the hearts and the minds of the younger generation to attract them into hard sciences.
How were the CHIPS Act decisions made? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, there are, as any prudent investor would ensure that they're investing in a viable project which would have high impact. So there are, traditional things about such as commercial viability of the projects, which private sectors looks at, and there is technical viability of the project. But the CHIPS looks into the broader factors when they are making the decisions. For the teams that are working on these deals, they build their own business case that include studying the market dynamics of these projects, such as supply demand, the pricing, the competition, margins, and so on. And also the team looks into the technical viability of the project, including, what's the disruptive technologies coming on the horizon, the competitiveness of the technologies. But I said, there are broader implications such as national security, impact on the supply chain resilience, companies' commitment to ecosystem development, workforce development. So these all factors go into the decision making. And I think you would agree that for a long-term sustainable manufacturing base, supply of the and development of semiconductor talent is essential. So like with every project, there is a risk reward trade-off, and the team tries to reduce the risk as much as possible. So this rubric is applied to all the projects, which determines the priority of the project. But in terms of the decision-making, beyond the team's own analysis, a lot of industry knowledge, market intelligence goes into the decision-making. So industry has been very kind to share their perspective. Team tapped into the CTOs and the supply chain leadership of the broad segments of economies, including defense, industrial, hyperscaler, consumer, and automotive companies. And these leaderships were kind enough to share their innovation needs, where they're headed, what are their supply chain requirements, their decision-making framework for the geo-sourcing. So all these factors, so it's a collective decision-making from the ecosystem. So it's been a privilege to interact with broad segment of the economy, understand their needs, where they're headed. And, there is a thought partnership with the DoD scientist and DoD leadership also. And so all this went into, making the decision behind the announcement that we are seeing.
What have been some of the more interesting observations working on this program?
I mean, it was a privilege to work with a large cross-section of the industry and hundreds of applications and learn from them. So I had an opportunity to look at interesting innovation, such as electronic components for nuclear fusion, on-chip protein sequencing, particle acceleration-based lithomachine, diamonds in the space, and so on. So a lot of interesting observation across the whole supply chain. But also the negotiations with the applicants are also very interesting. These companies are mostly focused on their commercial aspects of the project and making sure the projects are aligned to their corporate strategy. Government has broader context and sometimes more information about the landscape. So working with these companies, we reshaped most of the projects based on the macro needs or situation of particular company. So these things were very interesting, requesting a company to introduce a technology sooner than they would have originally planned, or have them do more packaging, or have the company raise more capital to shore up their balance sheet. even though the negotiations are always tough, but the feedback from the industry has been, you know, highly complimentary. So we helped companies with their customers, private investments to ensure these projects are sustainable in the long run. And I think the government around the world, they are in a very interesting situation. On the one hand, we cannot have technology move fast enough, as the economic gains and the national security is proportionate to the speed of innovation. On the other side, the government cannot let the technology run away, that it leads to a disorder. So it has been very interesting to see the intersection of the technology and the policy making and the decision making, you know, at that level.
Good information. If there were to be a CHIPS Act 2.0, what would it look like?
I think when people will look back, and I believe the books will be written about CHIPS Act, you know, though a few companies will modify their projects here and there, hopefully in the end, the ROI will be 10 times of the $40 billion that's invested, and I think it will be. But this supply chain is pretty integrated and involves thousands of companies, so no one country can do it all. However, what I observed was the role of the downstream component are changing. So AI systems, their requirement is reshaping the downstream components and the development of these components as well. The role of the commodities such as PCBs, discrete, chemicals, substrate is changing because of the system level requirement. So we need to bring in the cutting edge of these commodities. I think we did not get as much of, you know, discretes, the substrates and the PCB. In terms of if we have to look at 2.0. So we need to bring some of the cutting edge of these commodities here. And the economics of legacy packaging is still challenging. Even with the investment that we have, we need to do more on that front, either through the innovation and automation that we solve the economics of this, or with the increased investment. And secondly, the equipment companies is where it all starts. I think now the equipment companies are expanding elsewhere. So in future, this might become a choke point. So that's one area in terms of, you know, 2.0. And also the role of the memory has changed since the program started. I believe we'll be needing more memory in the PCs, phones, cars as well. This is DDR, but also it's a key enabler for the training and the inference system. So the, you know, the role of the memory has changed. So Micron was a good win on that front. So it's to be seen that if we need more of that. Finally, I think the quantum is very interesting. It's a bit in the distance right now. A whole lot of development needs to happen, but it can be a shot at regaining the manufacturing leadership. If we were to make, you know, sustained investment for next 10 years, I believe there's a good chance that dependency on Asia for high performance computing chips can be reduced by investing in the quantum. So I think these are few areas for, you know, 2.0 to think through.
Interesting. So final question, Sanjay, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but how do you see the Intel situation evolving?
I mean, the market is changing. I mean, situation has changed. The CapEx has become more challenging for these companies. But the ecosystem needs Intel and Samsung to succeed. I believe we have many CPUs, GPU, fabless companies, startup companies who are trying to take the market share from NVIDIA. But to manufacture these GPUs, practically, I think we have a single point of failure. So it's a big concern for the customers. It's a big concern for the all the, you know, the governments also. So the governments and the customers, they want Intel and Samsung to succeed. The question is, you know, with this changing markets landscape, will these companies will be able to keep on investing the high amount it requires to stay in the game? Maybe because of this CapEx situation, some of the expansion timeline may change. I think there is a role for private equity. There is a role for private companies to play. And I think there is some synergies between Intel and Samsung. Samsung understands the mobile workload. Intel has expertise in high performance computing. Samsung has a broader silicon technology portfolio that goes into mature node. Intel has some of the best packaging technology. So there are synergies. And there is chance of, or say the potential of working together. Will it happen? That's to be seen. But I think the situation is probably not going to be, going to be static. It is going to evolve to stay in this game. Both companies will probably need to find more investment from the private side or work together to succeed.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thanks for your time, Sanjay, and welcome back to Silicon Valley, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you so much, Dan, for having me. It was a pleasure.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.